a possibility offered to us by the Buddha that comes through this practice. Is freedom from suffering. And at one point, in certain places in the suttas, the Buddha points to this freedom in a phrase, liberation through non-clinging. The clinging, the holding, the tightening around experience, basically holding to experience that is not capable of providing lasting happiness through our mistaken notions about happiness and experience. We think that holding on to certain things, certain experiences will make us happy. And yet the very nature of experience, of all experience, is impermanent. It means that clinging to that which is impermanent in terms of the clinging is basically we're clinging to find happiness. The function of clinging is to hold on to something so we can have some ease or peace, thinking that that will bring us ease or peace or happiness in some fashion. And yet what we're clinging to, being impermanent, will change, will cease, will pass away. And because of that, we suffer. We have been holding on to something that is just slipping away. And so this clinging and the suffering that the Buddha pointed that we could be free from, the suffering is connected with that clinging. And in one place in the definition of the First Noble Truth, the Buddha very succinctly described suffering. He said, the five aggregates subject to clinging are suffering. And so this is a pointing to what we cling to that creates this suffering. And so it's useful to gain some kind of understanding about what we cling to. In various places, and mostly in the Samyutta Nikaya, there's a whole book called the Khanda Samyutta, which contains teachings about the five aggregates, Khanda being the Pali term for what's translated as aggregate. And in some of these teachings, it says that when we cling to something, what we are clinging to is found in the aggregates. And so the aggregates are understood basically as a description of what we experience. They are the components of our experience. They are happening all the time. These processes of body and mind that make up our experience, the Buddha enumerated them in a particular way. We can think of this as one way to perhaps slice up the pie of our experience. It's not the only way, probably, to describe what our experience is. But this is one way, and the Buddha used this framework all over in his teachings to describe how we cling, to describe how we tend to identify, create a sense of self. And so it's useful to gain a little bit of an understanding of this perspective of our human experience that the Buddha offers. And so what these five aggregates are, just briefly: form, experience of body, feeling, the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral aspect of experience, perception, this quality or this process of recognizing experience, of recognizing, identifying what is happening in our experience, mental formations, the intentional kind of volitional aspect of our experience, and consciousness, the knowing aspect of our experience. And so this description of our experience, whatever we experience, anything that we experience, is found in these five aggregates. And so it's not that we are trying to find something. And in terms of exploring these aggregates, exploring these experiences, whatever is happening in our experience and in form, for instance, is found not only the physical touch sense, but also sight, sound, smell, taste. And those are also related to form. And so whatever we are experiencing, a sound, that contact with the ear, that's the sound wave is form contacting the ear, which is form. Then there's the recognition of the sound. First, perhaps pitch and tone, then perhaps car or cough or dog. That's perception. Then there may be responses, reactions to that, liking, not liking, aversion, happiness, thoughts about the experience. Oh, that's that dog that's barking on that side of the property. Those are all mental formations found in that aspect of experience. And then consciousness, knowing, just this, the knowing happens like with that contact of the sound against the eardrum. That's the place where consciousness happens. And this aspect of it being every experience having a quality of whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And so whatever we're experiencing can be understood as these five aggregates kind of working together, coming together. This word aggregate may be kind of a funny word. We get used to it after a little while, but it's a translation of the Pali term khanda. And that term khanda is apparently a kind of more ordinary everyday word than the term aggregate is in English. I mean, we don't go around using the word aggregate all the time in our daily speech. And yet this word khanda means something more like heap or bundle or group, something like that. And maybe the translators of the canon wanted something a little more snappy to refer to such a profound teaching. The teaching on the groups. Maybe that doesn't quite do it for us. So these, we can just think of these five aspects as kind of groups of experience. These are places where, these are the aspects of our experience. And whatever we experience can be understood through this framework. It may not be natural at first to recognize, for instance, you know, while drinking coffee, you know, drinking tea or coffee, the aggregates are happening. I mean, the processes of body and mind are how we experience. These processes of the aggregates are how we experience. And so, you know, there's the smell of coffee. That's form contacting the sense base of the nose. There may be a pleasantness or unpleasantness for some, perhaps, of that smell. Thoughts about coffee, recognition of it as coffee, that's perception. And so we walk downstairs and smell the coffee in the morning at breakfast. It's like, whew, this is the aggregates weaving together. We may simply think, oh, there's coffee today. In that recognition, which is a mental formation, that thought, oh, there's coffee today, that's a mental formation. To have that thought, we've had to have the contact of that form of the smell in our nostrils and the consciousness, the recognition, the consciousness of that. And then the feeling, the pleasantness, and then the recognition of the coffee as based on history, we know that it's coffee. And so through our day, what we are experiencing is these five aggregates. And so when we are receiving experience, this encouragement, relax, recognize awareness. Awareness, mindfulness itself is in the aggregates also. It is a mental formation. And so right there, recognizing awareness, the mental formation. Receiving experience. What is received is the aggregates. They are happening all the time. They are the tumbling on of this being. And the definition that the Buddha offered of suffering as being the five aggregates subject to clinging. Maybe it's useful to understand not only something about clinging, but understand something about what we cling to and how that clinging functions. And so this teaching on the five aggregates is, I think there's a couple of main encouragements or reasons. The clinging itself, the suffering that comes from the clinging to these mental and physical processes. We could also call the teaching of the five aggregates the teaching of the physical and mental processes that make up our experience. The suffering the Buddha pointed to as being possible to be released from results from the clinging. And so in that description of the First Noble Truth, the Buddha said, in brief, the five aggregates subject to clinging our suffering. The five aggregates subject to clinging are dukkha. Why? Why are the five aggregates subject to clinging dukkha? Well, clinging itself is dukkha. That holding on, what we cling to. I mean, one of the key understandings, too, around these five aggregates is they are the components, the processes that make up our experience, and they are continually in flux. There is no stability in these five aggregates. They are continually arising and passing away. And in fact, in the Satipatthana Sutta, there's an instruction on attending to the five aggregates. And actually, we're already doing this, right? I mean, relax, receive what's happening. We're already receiving the aggregates. That's all that is being received. And so we're already doing this exploration of our experience. We may not quite be looking at it through the perspective or the lens of the aggregates at this point, but we're already receiving the experience of the aggregates. Noticing this changing nature of experience. And in the Satipatthana Sutta, the instructions about these five areas of experience, it's very simple. The teaching says, a practitioner abides contemplating experience as experience in terms of the five aggregates affected by clinging. And so this is a little bit of an instruction or encouragement to recognize experience in terms of this teaching. The experience is coming in anyway, and it's just a little bit of a kind of a recognition of, oh yes, this is form, this is feeling. So it initially can take a little bit of learning, understanding to begin to distinguish these aggregates. To recognize form as form, feeling as feeling, perception as perception. It can take some understanding, hearing something about the aggregate so that we can begin to recognize them and beginning to kind of orient towards curiosity. What is this in terms of the aggregates? And so, contemplating experience in terms of the five aggregates affected by clinging. And how does one contemplate experience in terms of the five aggregates affected by clinging? One understands. Such is material form. Such is form. So this is just that recognition, oh, this is form. Body experience. Tingling, vibration, pulsing. Coolness, heat, tension, hardness, softness. This is form. Sight, color, pitch, tone, bitterness, sweetness, salty. All of these are form. This is form. That's the first thing. And likewise with the others, such as feeling, such as perception, such as mental formation, such as consciousness. And I'll go through each one just a little bit today to give you a flavor of what each one is. So the first part is just understanding that such is form, feeling, perception, mental formation, consciousness. Recognizing form as form, recognizing perception as perception. These processes at work, recognizing these processes at work. The next part of the instruction is, so such is material form. Such is its arising, such is its passing away, such is its disappearance. An encouragement not only to notice the experience of form, but its impermanent nature. It's arising and ceasing. It's arising and ceasing. Likewise with feeling. Noticing the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral aspect of experience. It's coming and going. And so the contemplation of the impermanence of the aggregates is what the Buddha points to in the Satipatthana Sutta. There's elsewhere in the teachings where he really points to understanding how a sense of self is constructed. And we'll talk about that another day, another time. And so given that, I'm back to clinging now, given that these five aggregates are impermanent, clinging to them with the idea, which is where the clinging comes from, I can hold on to this and I'll be happy. I can have this thing and that will make me happy. The fact that it is changing even as it comes into being, it's disappearing even as it comes into being, the clinging to it is destined to futility. Because no amount of clinging is going to keep it from passing away. And so that is the suffering of the clinging. We cling to that which is impermanent. And it is suffering. It may not be felt as suffering initially because we have this kind of hit of, ooh, got it. Figured this out, holding on to this thing, got this thing that I like. And so we get a little bit of that sense of pleasure of the having, which is masking or obscuring the suffering of the clinging itself. Because clinging itself, it's a good word, actually. The word clinging in English is very evocative of what's going on. It's a squeezing. And it feels like a squeezing. And you know, this fist that's closed, that's squeezing. This is uncomfortable. So that aspect of clinging itself, the squeezing to hold on, is itself suffering. Regardless of the fact that what is there that we're trying to hold on to is slipping through and passing away. And ultimately, the happiness that we thought we had around having that thing will fall apart because the clinging can't keep that experience together. So the clinging itself, the squeezing, the holding, that is suffering masked by the having, the happiness of having. When we are in that space, there's some delusion, the thinking that we're happy having this thing as we're holding on to it. As we begin to come into the exploration of our experience, we feel the tightness, the squeezing, the tension. And it feels like squeezing to me when the mind is holding on, when it's grasping. That's a great word because it often feels here in the area of the heart like squeezing. This is dukkha. They're inherent. Another way to understand the five aggregates as subject to clinging is dukkha is the term dukkha, the term for suffering, can be understood to mean the actual experience of suffering, like the experience that comes with that squeezing itself. But it also can be understood to be kind of the nature of experience that is impermanent. The nature, the experience that is impermanent, its nature is dukkha because it is unreliable as a place for happiness. And so sometimes this word dukkha is pointing to the unreliability of experience more than the experience of suffering. And so sometimes there are places where it says, this is dukkha, this experience is dukkha, or this thing is dukkha, and it's pointing to the unreliable nature of the experience. Another piece of why these five aggregates subject to clinging are dukkha is that another way the clinging manifests, the two main ways that clinging manifests, one in terms of Bhikkhu Bodhi gives these two succinct words. I like the language he uses. He says, two forms of clinging, appropriation and identification. Appropriation meaning this is mine. And so that's that kind of ownership, holding on to something as being mine. And identification, this is me, this is who I am. These are different forms of clinging, different ways that clinging happens. And that second form, the identification, one of the main ways that we identify around these aggregates is by taking them to be, is some way in which we take them to be amenable to our wishes. You know, we think they should be amenable to our wishes, and that it must be my fault if they're not amenable to my wishes. There's a teaching in which the Buddha expresses, he says, form is not self. If form were self, it would be possible to say a form. May my form be thus. May my form not be thus. But form is not self, so it is not possible to say a form. May my form be thus. May my form not be thus. I mean, in some ways, this is what we want, you know. It's like our mind is searching for, may my mental formations be thus. May my mind have these beautiful states of mind arising. May my mind never have these arising in it. This is kind of what we hope to be able to control. And yet, this is a place the Buddha points. These aggregates are not really amenable to our whims, our desires. I mean, wouldn't it be nice? May my body be thus. May my body not be thus. May my body not have this stomach ache today. Oh, good luck with that one. And so this is another way in which these five aggregates subject to clinging are dukkha, in that we wish they could be under our control and they're not. And with the identification, we feel like they should be. We feel like it's a problem or we're failing somehow. If I can't make my mind be continuously mindful, I must be doing it wrong. I'm at fault. As opposed to simply recognizing and understanding, conditions come together for the arising of mindfulness at times. Those conditions fall apart and mindfulness passes. And so I'd like to just go through each of these five briefly today, give a flavor for each of these, and to help you see in a way. I mean, this is a reminder. This is a description of experience, a description of what can be seen as we explore, as we notice, as we receive experience. We are already receiving the aggregates. This has already happened. We can't not have that happen, because this is what's going on in our experience. and yet beginning to understand and recognize the experience from this perspective can take a little bit of a hearing something about, well, what is the piece of the experience that's form? What is the piece of the experience that's feeling? And so form, talked about this a little bit just now, is the physical body experience and its sensations, the touch sensations, all of those vibrating, pulsing, tingling, cool, heat, all of those kind of physical sensations are form. Plus all of the contact with the other physical senses, so sight, sound, smell, taste, not only the contact or the impingement, and in a very real way, this maps onto the physical world because, you know, the sound, you know, when I ring this bell, it is physically altering the air, creating pressure and pulses in the air that are contacting your ear, physical contact of that air pulse on the ear, creating the vibration of that eardrum translated into hearing. And so both the ear, the form traveling through the air, those are both understood to be form. So much of our experience is in this realm of form. Sight, the photons touching our retina, that's the form experienced as sight. And so the five physical senses comprise the form. It's really useful, and we pointed to this a little bit, I think, yesterday morning, to begin to recognize what is our physical experience. And this is, I think, really where this teaching on the aggregates really helps us to tease apart our experience, because it's so easy to mistake something happening in our minds for a physical experience. May seem like that wouldn't be possible, but it's very, the way our minds work, I think I talked about the mind kind of weaving experience into a coherent whole. And so it can be kind of hard to distinguish body from mind. And so we can begin by recognizing or hearing some of the teaching again. It's like you're already experiencing body sensations. And to begin to recognize, what is the body sensation? That vibratory, pulsing, tingling, cool, heat, form and color in the eye, pitch and tone in the ear. The feeling tone, this the next aggregate, feeling tone, is a separate experience. And as I said yesterday, that feeling tone is understood to be mental, not physical. And so the sight comes in, and really what sight is just that, you know, that form and color. Form and color. Then the mind receives that, creates, so all the aggregates happening here, experiences it as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, understands what it is, the perception of it, light, chair, person, has thoughts about it. And so all of this happening, the seeing, so easy to confuse the seeing, just this, you know, form and color coming into the eye with those processes at work that help us to navigate the world. And so in some ways we explore learning the language of bodily experience, physical sensations, the touch sensations. We learn the kind of bare qualities of touch sensation. You know, hands touching here. Hands is not what is experienced. Hand is a concept created through the contact of the experience of pressure, hardness, and memory, the recognition of that. Many, many times knowing, this is my hand touching something. But the hand is not physical. Hand is a concept. The physicality here is the coolness, the heat, the pressure, the tension, the hardness. And so we begin to learn the language of how our physical being communicates with us. We begin to be able to distinguish the physical from the mental. And in this teaching on the aggregates, it really is teasing apart the mental terrain of our experience. And so it's very amenable in particular to this style of practice where we're really emphasizing understanding what's going on in the mind. Because this teaching of the aggregates, one of the five aggregates is the physical form realm. The realm of form, and the other four aggregates describe the processes of mind and help us to understand something about these processes of mind and how they work and how they interweave and how they affect each other. These aggregates aren't simply, you know, kind of these separate streams. They intertwine and affect each other. So that's a little bit about form. Feeling is this very simple aspect of experience being pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant. Neutral, we could say. We could say feeling tone, the Pali term, vedana. Feeling tone is a little more descriptive because feeling, the word feeling in English often means emotions. And this is much simpler than emotion. Every single experience that we have, very naturally. This is arising all the time, these five aggregates coming into being. And when there is contact, when there is a sense impression of any contact with any of our sense bases, mental or physical, sight, there's a feeling associated with that, either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Sound, likewise, body sensation. Every single experience has this quality. And often this experience of feeling tone, of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, rides below the level of our conscious awareness. And we're kind of automatically reacting to it. Like the pleasant, don't like the unpleasant, without really even knowing and noticing the feeling tone itself. And so this is actually a really important field of recognition of experience, this feeling tone. The Buddha highlighted it as being a crucial place that helps us to see through the craving and clinging. Because it is out of this feeling tone. The feeling tone is the springboard from which craving and clinging arise. You know, that something's pleasant, we like it, we want it. Something unpleasant, we don't like it, we don't want it. And we're usually not noticing this realm. We're just automatically already liking and not liking something. without ever actually having felt or touched into that feeling tone itself. And so every experience, physical or mental, has this quality, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Thoughts, emotions have this quality, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And so we, opening to this, these aggregates, hearing, at least again, remembering that this teaching is not so much, I'm not telling you, you know, look for feeling tone. I'm describing this as a natural part of what happens in experience. Hearing about it creates conditions potentially for the mind to begin to recognize it, be curious about it, and notice it. And so this isn't exactly an instruction here in this style of practice, but it is, you know, the description of these things, the description of the kind of bare, kind of elemental nature of physical experience, and the description of feeling, this pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, may help us to be able to actually see our experience in this way. And then perception is a rich area. Perception is the mental process by which we recognize what's happening. It's related to our memory, basically, that we have experienced things many times, and you know, so in many ways, how we perceive things. I mean, it's like we don't know chair coming out of the womb. We don't have concepts really coming out of the womb. We learn these things. We're told. The perceptions that happen in the infant are much more basic, and they don't have words to them either. But there is this, maybe my sense is there is this, you know, color and form happening, body sensations, pleasant, unpleasant. This is all happening in the baby. I mean, this experience of hunger creating suffering, the child cries, a form appears that offers milk, and learning begins. Learning begins. And so what we recognize and how we recognize it has been conditioned. So our perceptions, how we perceive the world, is not out there. And chair, the recognition of that as chair, is happening in the mind. And so as we go through our day, I mean, it's like, thank goodness, perception's at work. It's like a shortcut, you know? It's like as we go through our day, we don't have to, like a baby going through its experiences in the first, it's like it's meeting all of this stuff that is just completely new and awesome. And as we go through our day, it's like, I don't have to come in here and every time figure out that you're people. Thank goodness. So that this is it's kind of a shortcut. This perception is a shortcut to help us navigate the complexity of the world. And so it's a pattern matching kind of function, helping us to recognize what we're experiencing based on having experienced similar things in the past. It's a useful process. Again, this is something that's natural and that serves us as human beings, this process of perception. We don't actually want to get rid of it. We don't want to stop it. But we do, it's really helpful to not mistake our perceptions for being what's out there. Because our perceptions are conditioned, there's a lot of room for misperceiving, making a mistake in perception. There can be some like basic misperception. We can see this a classic example is going into a darkened room and a coiled form in the corner. As you walk in, it's perceived as a snake. And then your eyes adjust and you recognize it's a rope. And so when we walk in the room and perceive it as a snake, what automatically will happen probably is that the mind takes that perception to be what's out there. And there is a whole host of things that happens as a result of that perception. Fear, for instance. Snakes generally create fear in human beings. So that perception taken to be reality, and again, this is useful in a way. I mean, again, we don't want to necessarily stop it, but what we want to learn is to recognize that what we're perceiving, what we're experiencing, all that we experience, actually part of what I want to emphasize in this talk is that all that we can experience is a creation of our own minds. And so this looking out and knowing that you're all sitting out here, people and chairs and zabutons and floors and lights, it's like what I'm experiencing is not what's actually out there. I'm not actually experiencing you. I'm experiencing my mind's construction of what's out there. And because we tend to take what we are experiencing to be reality, a delusion can slip in to believe that we are experiencing reality in a very almost like we're just cameras and microphones taking in experience, recording exactly what's going on. But that's not the way our minds work, really. We are very dynamically creating what we know, what we're experiencing. And there's a lot of room for misinterpretation to come in based on our conditioning. Our views, our opinions, our beliefs can shape how we receive experience. And so our views can shape our perceptions. It's not as simple as just chair. There's a lot to explore in this terrain. This is a big area of understanding, and yet what we can just explore here is beginning to recognize the process of perception at work, and perhaps noticing that perception is a function in the mind, and recognizing, oh yes, the experience here is being mediated through the mind and is not the actual whatever's happening out there. And so this process of perception happens through recognition, and we can begin to get a taste of this. In experience, you might have experienced something like this, where you're sitting and a sound arises, and immediately, so there's the sound, and immediately the mind will go, maybe, dog barking. So that's a perception. the mind may, it's the pitch and tone strike the ear, and that's the hearing. And then the mind recognizes, does this like pattern, really quick pattern matching, and that sound is like dogs I've heard before. And so it creates this recognition, and that recognition of that perception arises in various ways, usually in some form that's like a thought. It might arise as a thought, dog. And so, or you might even have an image of a dog. It might come as a terrier. You might see the cute face even in your mind, the image. So it can come as a word, a spoken word in the mind, like dog or sneeze or cough or air conditioner, fan, as we hear things and recognize them. In my experience, the terrain of hearing is one of the easiest places to begin to notice this process of perception at work, because there's a difference between the quality of that pitch and tone and the mind recognizing, oh, dog, barking, person. There's just like the mind saying these things. Like it can almost, when we start to see it, it can almost get a little bit like, why am I saying these things? This is perception at work. We can see this. And if we can begin to recognize it, it's useful to recognize it as a process of the mind. When we begin to see that perception can make mistakes, like the snake rope kind of analogy, snake rope thing. You know, we can begin to see that we had perhaps interpreted that to be a snake, creating a whole host of reactions and things. Then when we recognize that it's a rope, we see that all of that reactivity goes away. Mental formations, the next area, is this whole range. This is also a huge area of experience, but this is a lot of what we're familiar with exploring, really. This is the terrain of our emotions, our thoughts, all of our mental activities involving a kind of intention or volition. And so this includes emotions, anger, confusion, frustration, irritation, pride, annoyance, love, concentration. So mind states more than emotions. Tranquility, mindfulness. These are all mental formations. Thoughts are mental formations. Intentions, beliefs, views are mental formations. So this is a whole large area of our experience that you're familiar with. You're already really exploring the mental formation piece. You're talking about it in the meetings. These volitional formations have a very powerful effect on the other aggregates. There's an understanding of the volitional formations being the shapers of our experience. The definition of volitional formations in one place is, I'll read this. Why are they called volitional formations? They construct the conditioned. Therefore, they're called volitional formations. And what is the conditioned they construct? They construct conditioned form as form. They construct conditioned feeling as feeling. They construct conditioned perception as perception, volitional formations, and consciousness. And so these mental formations, volitional formations, are the engine constructing our experience of the aggregates. This definition points to volitional formations creating our experience of form, of feeling, of perception, of mental formation, of consciousness. We can see this at work in something like, well, in anything, but I'll just describe it in terms of anger. Anger arises. It has an effect on the body. It shapes the body, often with an experience of pressure and heat, a rising sense of pressure and heat in the chest, the torso, the head. It can distort our actual physical features, create tightness and tension, distort the face. So anger, this volitional formation, influencing, constructing bodily experience. It constructs the feeling. When anger arises, the feeling tends to be unpleasant. It constructs our perceptions. We tend to perceive things through this lens of anger, maybe interpreting somebody walking in front of us. They're just walking along, and we interpret them as dissing us with that lens, perhaps. Now, the perception is of them being disrespectful. Anger tends to construct more anger. Tends to construct more of that flavor of volitional formation. And the consciousness piece is a little more subtle, but essentially our consciousness is directed by the filters. We take certain things in with this filter of anger, and we don't take other things in. And so what our consciousness actually meets will be guided by this formation of anger. And so seeing the mental formations at work, this is some of what we've been exploring, the conditionality of experience. How do thoughts affect experience? How do emotions affect the body and mind? What happens? So noticing this conditionality, this is really the conditionality piece, the noticing of conditionality really comes into play in this aspect of the aggregates, the mental formations. And then consciousness. I'll just do this one really briefly because I'll talk more about it at another time. It's basically the very simple process of knowing. It said there are six kinds of consciousness: seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smelling consciousness, taste consciousness, touch consciousness, and mind consciousness. And as Saito Utejaniya says, consciousness is a little bit stupid. It's just sight, sound. It kind of just knows this meeting of contact with the sense base. Every experience has this quality. We don't meet experience without this quality of knowing. Knowing happens every moment of experience, whether we are mindful or not. All of these aggregates go on. The aggregates, all five aggregates, are arising and ceasing, whether we're mindful or not. Mindfulness as a volitional formation may be arising at times, but these aggregates carry on no matter what. And so perception, feeling, knowing, these functions of mind are happening all the time. That's actually a lot of how we manage to navigate the world when we're lost in thought. Is perception, feeling, and consciousness are doing their job, helping us see and recognize, oh, this is a door. I can walk through that. I won't walk through the wall. So the perception, the mental form, the perception, the feeling, and the knowing happening all the time. Just this recognition of experience. These three together, I think of as being kind of the ground of our experience, the basic structure of our mental experience. We know something, we feel it and perceive it. They come together, they happen together. And the Buddha pointed to these three being very intimately linked. He said, feeling, perception, consciousness are conjoined. And we can't really tease them apart to say, oh, this is what knowing is. This is what consciousness is. We need feeling and perception to recognize consciousness. We need consciousness and feeling to recognize perception. And so there's like three sides of a prism, these three aspects. And so the knowing is just like bare recognition of an object. It comes with every experience. There's the seeing and the knowing of it, the hearing the knowing of it, smelling the knowing of it, a thought and the knowing of it. And mindfulness can be kind of interested in the object of that experience or the knowing itself. And so we can, this is an area where the mindfulness can orient kind of more to the specific qualities of the experience itself, or the quality of the mind that is, the knowing is kind of a very neutral function of mind that's just like this reflecting quality. It doesn't care what it reflects, it just reflects. And we can touch into that with the mindfulness. It can be a very peaceful kind of recognition. So consciousness basically illuminates the objects, illuminates experience. And so the encouragement here, not to necessarily try to pull these apart, but just, let this, and if maybe I'll just say, at this point, having heard this talk, you're welcome to completely forget it. You do not have to try to hang on to it, remember it, try to figure out what's going on. At a certain point in experience, there might be, for instance, the arising of a sound and you noticing, dog. And it's like, oh, that's what she talked about. And so let it come into play in that way. It's not something to pick up as an exercise to figure these things out. They are already happening. So this has just been a description. And the learning that can happen around these can really help us to understand how clinging happens and how the identification, the sense of self, is constructed. That leads to this suffering. And so the study of these aggregates is really a study of how suffering comes to be and how it can fall apart. Thank you for your attention.